As an 8-year-old growing up in Sudan, Gore Mariel was kidnapped at gunpoint and forced to work in a labor camp. He went on to become an Iowa Cyclone track star and is now an Olympic marathon runner. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Just last week, the International Olympic Committee ruled that Gore Mariel could compete in London under the Olympic flag. Later in the hour, we'll hear from one of his coaches at Iowa State, Corey Immels. Before that, Jeffrey Ding and Liam Hancock of Iowa City West High School. Last month, they were crowned national champions of high school policy debate, even beating out exclusive college prep teams. That's all coming up. First, this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. He's been dubbed the runner without a country, and he has an Iowa connection. Gore Mariel is a 28-year-old marathon runner and refugee from the newly independent African nation of South Sudan. As a boy in his native country, Mariel was kidnapped at gunpoint when he was just 8 years old and forced to work in a labor camp. He escaped, but then was kidnapped again and forced to work for a Sudanese soldier's family without pay. He eventually fled to Egypt, then came to the United States as a teenager, where he went to high school in New Hampshire, and then he came here to Iowa. Between 2006 and 2010, Mariel competed in cross-country at Iowa State University in Ames, where he also earned a degree. Now, Gore Mariel is a permanent resident of the United States. However, he's not a citizen. And because the newly independent country of South Sudan does not yet have a national Olympic body, Mariel had no way to compete at the Olympics. The International Olympic Committee encouraged Mariel to run in the Olympics for Sudan. Sudan offered him a spot in the Games, but Mariel refused, saying he would be betraying his people and his family members who died for freedom. So, after many months of consideration, just a few days ago, the International Olympic Committee ruled Mariel could compete under the Olympic flag. Here's Mariel talking to Reuters about what competing at the Olympics means to him.
It's very emotional, and it raises a high hope to the young kid, especially the young generation. It means a lot. And for me, it means a lot to glorify the people who die for the freedom.
Joining me now is Corey Immels, director of men's and women's track and field and cross country at Iowa State University. Immels was instrumental in bringing Gore Mariel to Iowa State University. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Before we start talking about Gore Mariel and his experience at Iowa State University and how he came to be there, what was your reaction to Gore Mariel being allowed to compete in the Olympics under the Olympic flag?
Well, obviously, like everyone else, we were really excited and happy for Gore. You held out hope that it would prevail and the right thing would happen, and luckily for him and for everyone else involved, it did. So just really happy for him as a young man and just how hard he's worked to this point. So, I don't think I lost my smile on Saturday after I found out.
Mm-hmm. He graduated from ISU in 2010. Have you had a lot of contact with him in the meantime?
Yeah, Gore's somebody that he's one of those former athletes that 4th of July, Christmas, Easter, whatever holiday it is, I get a text message. It's like clockwork. And we've talked about his training and different things that he's been doing. We didn't really discuss the what he was kind of going through until just recently, and he kind of kept it to himself. And I knew he was working through trying to get citizenship here in the United States and going through that process. And we had talked about that a little bit, but not in depth. So he's just one of those, former athletes that you know you're going to hear from every so often. So we've been up to date on what he's doing and supporting, kind of his goals and aspirations as he moves forward.
Corey Immels, you were instrumental in bringing Gore Mariel to Iowa State University. How did you first hear about Gore?
Well, we recruit, throughout the country and throughout the world. And back in that time before Facebook and everything else has become so popular, you know, we would just send mailings out. And he got one of our mailings, sent it back, and we just kind of started correspondence through that. And he was someone that athletically was very good, but, you know, academically he'd only been in the country 3 years, and he'd done 4 years of high school in 3 years, and not knowing any English when he arrived. So he was very strong in his classes, but the test scores were an issue, just with the English language. So, you know, we recruited him to start with, and I think a lot of other schools did as well. But I think a lot of people shied away just because of it just was unsure whether or not he would be able to be a qualifier into a Division I institution. So. And once I started recruiting him and once I had him on campus for a visit, it was just somebody that I really felt would blossom here at Iowa State. And for whatever reason, I just thought we're going to get him into school. Even when it looked bleak, I thought, you know, it's going to happen. We're going to get him into school. And, you know, I don't think we got him into school until maybe 2 or 3 days before classes started. But there was, you know, a lot of hard work done with admissions here on campus, our compliance department here at Iowa State and athletics. A lot of people went, you know, beyond the call of duty to get him into school. We had to do a waiver with the NCAA, but I knew once he got here and got into our environment, and you know, there's such a great international community here at Iowa State. I knew we would blossom and do very well, I'm just glad we got past that first little hurdle.
Sounds like he has some amount of charisma.
Yeah, you know, he's just a wonderful young man to be around. I think the one thing that I miss about Gore, you know, other than the fact that he was a really good athlete, is, you know, whenever I, you know, would be having a bad day at work and you go to practice, he's got a big smile on his face, and everything he'd been through from, you know, a young person leaving his country to getting here to the United States as a refugee to getting to university, you know, he just never lost that smile and that positive attitude, and that's carried him through. I think that's part of the reason he's going to be running in the Olympics.
Let's talk a little bit about his athletic prowess at ISU. Gore was an All-American cross-country runner at Iowa State University from 2006 to 2010. And for those, Corey, not familiar with cross-country running, can you explain for us the events that Gore Mariel competed in?
Yeah, Gore was primarily a distance athlete for us on the track, but in cross-country, which is usually run on grass terrain and usually a golf course-type environment, and he was an All-American for us in cross-country, which is, you know, as a distance athlete, as a cross-country indoor and outdoor track and field distance athlete, to be All-American in cross-country, it's no easy feat because you got all the distance runners from every discipline within the track environment in cross-country. So to do that, you know, it's a great feat, and he's somebody that, you know, worked very hard. You know, he did tremendous for us at the Big 12, you know, cross-country indoor and outdoor meets. And, you know, he was the upper echelon of distance running here in the United States as far as collegiate cross-country and track and field goes.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that set Gore apart as a long-distance runner in terms of his style, perhaps his strategy, approach to racing or training?
Yeah, and I don't know if it's the best strategy, but he was going to give you everything he had till he couldn't go anymore.
Right from the get go, he doesn't hold anything back.
He was just somebody that would just it wasn't ever pretty, but he was going to give you everything he had from the start. And I was telling someone the other day that there was a couple Big 12 conference meets where you know, he'd run the 10K on Friday and come back and run the 5K on Sunday, and there was a couple of those because he battled some injuries, and there was a couple 10Ks on that Friday where he couldn't walk off the track. And, you know, as a staff, we'd sit back that night and go, well, I don't know if Gore's going to be able to go on Sunday. And he always did. He always showed up on Sunday and gave us everything he had. So, you know, he was a little stubborn, and I think that's an attribute that, you know, I think he saw very early in his life that if you work really hard, you can accomplish whatever you want. And that's great, but sometimes in athletics you got to be able to be patient and wait and not go so hard from the start. And I think he struggled with that a little bit, but you know, how do you tell somebody that's been where he's been to this point, and every time he's worked hard, he's gotten what he's wanted? It's, you know, that's, I can't really defend that very well. So, but I think that set him apart. He was just, you know, a tough kid, and he was going to give you everything he had, no matter what the conditions were.
If you've just joined us, my guest this half hour is Corey Immels. He's director of the men's and women's track and field and cross country at Iowa State University. We're talking about Gore Mariel, a 28-year-old marathon runner, a refugee from the newly independent African nation of South Sudan, competed in cross country at Iowa State University, also earning a degree from 2006 to 2010. And perhaps you heard the news. After many months of consideration, the International Olympic Committee ruled recently that Gore Mariel could compete under the Olympic flag. And Corey Immels was instrumental in bringing Gore Mariel to Iowa State University. Back to his athletic achievements, Gore Mariel posted the Olympic qualifying time in his first ever marathon last year. He's run two times at 2 hours, 12 minutes, and then another at 2 hours, 14 minutes. That's about a 5-minute mile pace for the 26-plus miles, the marathon. I wonder, you talked about it wasn't always pretty when he ran at Iowa State University. It sounds like he would push himself further than most runners. Do you think he could had a higher tolerance for pain because of his upbringing?
I definitely think so. You know, I've thought that many times, that just, you know, what he's had to go through, you know, when you're, you know, walking across the desert and you don't have any food and water and you don't know if you're going to live tomorrow. I think the Big 12 meet or the NCAA meet is pretty insignificant. So I think, you know, I think there's something to that. I think he knows when the pain happens. I think he can feel it. He knows it. But I think he pushes his body beyond it, you know, more so than probably anybody I've ever had here at Iowa State.
Mm-hmm. Does that give him an edge, or perhaps work against him in some cases?
Yeah, it's one of those deals where it's maybe a double-edged sword, because I think you know, especially in the marathon, I think the marathon is an event which patience is key. And it's funny, because I got a text from Gore after his, you know, his first one was 2:14, and I thought that was awesome. I thought, man, that's a great start for him. And then he sent me a text after the 2:12, and he was a little disappointed, and you know, my wife kind of chuckled. She's like, why is he disappointed? And I'm like, because Gore thought he was going to run 2:06.
Mm.
And that's his mentality, you know. And that's, you know, as an athlete, you got to have a little bit of that mentality. You got to be a little crazy in some senses to be a great marathoner. So I think, does it work against him? Yeah, probably at times. But I'd take the other side of the coin probably more so than the other.
So we have some sense of that. If we're not familiar with the marathon, what is the world record time in the marathon?
Oh, it's 2:00. I don't quote me here, but I think it's a 2:03, somewhere
203.
Around there.
So he was wanting to approach that in his second marathon.
Yeah, and that's just Gore. You know, that didn't surprise me whatsoever. And you know, it's, you know, God bless him. I mean, that's you know, he's not out there to run 2:12. He's out there to run 2:06 or faster. And you know, the sky's the limit.
I mentioned in the introduction that Gore Mariel was, and you've referred to this too, his background, an amazing upbringing in Sudan. He was kidnapped at gunpoint at the age of 8 in Sudan, and forced to work in a labor camp, escaped, kidnapped again, forced to work for Sudanese soldiers, a Sudanese soldier's family, without pay. Eventually, he fled to Egypt, then eventually to the U.S. as a teenager. He went to high school in New Hampshire and then ended up in college at Iowa State University. Did Gore ever talk to you? Has he talked to you about his experience growing up? Some details of these stories I've mentioned?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, we haven't really sat down and in-depthly, you know, went over the past. He knows, I know what he's been through. And there was times where, you know, life was hard here at Iowa State. I mean, you know, academics was hard, you know, athletics was hard. And you know, we would sit in the office and sit back and just, you know, kind of, you know, reassess things and just put things in perspective. And I think Gore was an athlete here at Iowa State that I've never had anybody study and work as hard as Gore did. And I, you know, when we would go on a trip, say we'd go to California, we'd leave on a Thursday and get back on a Sunday. You know, when we were on a plane, he had a book open. When we were on a, you know, on the bus, he had a book open. You know, when we were, you know, at the hotel, he was down in the lobby and with a book open. You know, he had to work really hard. And I think there was moments of despair there. You know, as you go through the process and you know, why is everything so hard for me? Why, you know, his upbringing was hard. His child, you know, he didn't have a childhood, and it wasn't so much that we talked about what had happened, more so, you know, just some of the experiences that he had here at Iowa State. You know, one example that really sticks out for me is we always go to Decorah for our cross-country camp before school starts. And we have this little church camp that we go to, and it's pretty rustic. But there's a church bell there at the camp. And the instinct that, you know, you go back to your days at the YMCA camp or, you know, the Bible school camp you went to growing up, you ring the bell when dinner's ready. And I just remember Gore, the first time we were there, he wanted to ring the bell. And it just struck me. It's like he didn't have a childhood. He didn't go to camp. He wasn't able to ring the bell. And, you know, there's a big tree right next to where we would eat every day. And he climbed all the way to the top of the tree. And things like that as we went along that just struck me in the sense that, you know, he didn't experience those things growing up because he had to grow up really fast. And I think trying to give him some semblance of a family here just somewhat of a fun experience because life got really hard for him really early.
Mm-hmm. That image of the bell ringing and climbing up in the tree, that is such a touching image. I wonder if his background and his success in the face of where he came from had any effect on your other runners.
Yeah, I think it does, but I think that takes time, and I think sometimes, you know, if you grew up in West Des Moines or Ames, Iowa, or Fort Dodge, Iowa, you know, I had to treat Gore a little differently than I treated everyone else. You know, when something needed to be discussed that, you know, maybe he did wrong or wasn't what we wanted as a group, you know, I couldn't be... you know, I couldn't be Bobby Knight, for lack of a better term. I had to be a very, I don't know how to explain it, but just very, you know, a little bit less harsh. And I think sometimes, you know, maybe Gore got away with some things, not bad things, but just, you know, I let him, you know, if he was late for practice, you know, I wasn't going to, you know, get down his throat. You know, I was just, you know, he's from Africa. There is no clock. There is no watch. You know, it's just kind of getting used to the culture here. And you know, but I think once the student athletes that weren't from, you know, Africa or where Gore came from or once they knew his background, I think they understood. And it's something I tell the athletes all the time. It's like having a family. I can't treat all of you the same way. You're all different. And you know, a lot of my athletes have brothers and sisters, and you know, it's like, well, your mom and dad don't treat your brothers and sisters the same way, and I can't treat all of you the same way. But I think, you know, as the group that Gore came in with, as they matured and got to know him and understood where he came from, and I know Gore shared that with some of his teammates, and they understood, and just to see the outpouring now of his teammates on Facebook and different things, and just how excited they were when Gore, you know, came to know that he was going to run in the Olympics. I think that just speaks volumes of how they understand kind of where he came from and what he's about.
Corey, an Olympic spokesman has said that Gore is running times that wouldn't get him a medal, but could get him into the top 10 or 20. Is that the way you see it?
Yeah, I think he's, you know, I think if he was in the top 10 or top 20, I think that'd be a tremendous day for him.
Would he think so?
Probably not. I mean, you know, if he ran 206 and he was 10th, he'd probably be pretty happy. I just think the marathon is a different event. You know, a former teammate of mine, John Brown, who ran here at Iowa State, was fourth in the 2000 and 2004 Olympic marathon, missed a medal by, you know, a few seconds both times. And John was a very tough athlete, and I likened Gore a lot like John. You know, you never know. You go back in history, and realistically, I think top 10, top 20 is probably a pretty good guesstimate. But the one thing I know about Gore is he's going to put his head in there. We're going to see him on TV because he's going to be in that lead group for as long as he can. He ain't going to start in the back and hope somebody's going to falter and come back to him. He's going to be in that group for a while. So, you know, unless that group goes out, you know, a lot faster than what he's ready to go, which I don't think it will, because I think the Olympic marathon is going to be somewhat tactful. He's going to be in that group. And I think that's exciting. I think that's what you want. You know, if I was telling him what to do, I would say, you know, just stick our nose in there and see what happens. Hmm. You know, if you falter a little bit and you end up 15th, at least you put yourself out there. But he's always done that. He's not going to do it any differently.
In reading about Gore and his experience, almost every photo, video I've seen of him has been with an Iowa State jersey on, a shirt on. Imagine there's such a sense of pride there at ISU and in your program. You also as an alum of Iowa State.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You know, I was out for a run on Saturday morning and got back and had a phone message from him telling me, you know, he was in, and then I called him right back, and he was out for a run. So I left a voicemail on his machine. I said, Gore, you know, don't call me back. You know, when you get time, just call me back when you have time. And, you know, 10 minutes later, I got a phone call from him. And the first thing he said, he goes, Coach, another cyclone in the Olympics, you know, and it wasn't about him. It wasn't about South Sudan. It was like, I got another cyclone in the Olympics. So, yeah, I mentioned that to somebody the other day. It's like every photo, every newspaper, it's always an Iowa State, shirt or pants or shorts, whatever he's wearing. So, he's got tremendous pride at this place. And he just, you know, he understands that he was given an opportunity here and that led to, bigger and greater things. But, there was other people instrumental, you know, in his high school career and his host family back in New Hampshire, you know, to this day, tremendous people and have done so much for him. I just think he's just that's just kind of the young man he is. He knows where he's come from, and he's never going to forget that.
Corey Immels, we'll keep our fingers crossed in the coming days as we watch Gore compete. Thank you for joining us. Director of men's and women's track and field and cross country at Iowa State University, Corey Immels, thank you.
Thank you.
River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.
This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. There are many outstanding young students throughout the state of Iowa. In high school, many are student athletes. They compete in sports such as football, basketball, track and field, and soccer. And it's often high school sports which grab the limelight. Well, now, in this part of the program, we want to focus on fierce competition of a different sort, high school debate. This year alone, three Iowa high schools were nationally recognized as schools of excellence in debate. Roosevelt High School in Des Moines, Dowling Catholic High School in West Des Moines, and West High School in Iowa City. Jeffrey Ding and Liam Hancock are recent graduates and policy debaters at West High School in Iowa City. In May, they won the nation's most prestigious high school debate tournament held nationally at the University of Kentucky. It's called the Tournament of Champions, and it's a contest which features the best of the best debaters who travel on the national circuit. And last month, Jeffrey and Liam were crowned national champions in Indianapolis at the National Forensic League's National Tournament. They won the final round in a 9-6 decision. Jeffrey Ding and Liam Hancock join me in the studio now. Welcome to you, and congratulations on this great honor.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Let's start at the ground floor. For someone who is unacquainted with high school debate or may have run into it at some point and perhaps was confused by what was happening or couldn't identify what was happening, explain how it works. Who wants to tackle that? You, Liam?
Sure. Basically, there are two teams, both made up of two individuals from a school, who debate on either side of a topic. This year, the topic was about space, and there is an affirmative team and a negative team. The affirmative team proposes a policy that the government could pursue and tries to persuade the judge that that policy should be enacted. The negative team basically tries to disprove that claim.
As you mentioned, Liam, each year there is hundreds of schools throughout the country compete in this policy debate, and they are all debating the pro and con sides of the year's resolution. So we have across the country all the debaters focused on one resolution. This year's resolution, which you referred to, if I can quote it, resolved the United States federal government should substantially increase its exploration and or development of space beyond the Earth's mesosphere. So what was your approach, Jeffrey?
So the way it works is every single round, you'll either be affirmative or negative. So you don't necessarily like only defend the affirmative side or the negative side. And usually most teams will choose like a stable affirmative. So they'll run the same policy throughout the year. Like our affirmative this year was mostly based off of increasing research on the International Space Station. Mm-hmm. So we would be able to prepare for that before the rounds and just have all the research on the International Space Station done. Then for the negative side, that's where you have to be more flexible and be able to adapt to different policies, because other teams might run arguments like increase solar power satellites or increase weaponization of space.
Okay, so I see. Before right. the tournament, you don't know what the if you're in the negative, you don't know exactly what arguments the affirmative is going to use. So you have to be light on your feet. You have to have this battery of counter-arguments, depending on where they're coming from. Am I getting the gist of this?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay. So you argued what in this case?
Well, on the affirmative, our argument was that there's currently we're unable to use the International Space Station effectively because we don't have our own launch vehicle. We're basically using Russian launch vehicles or commercial launch vehicles. And we made the argument that we need a government launch vehicle in order to get equipment up there, astronauts, and et cetera.
Mm-hmm. And on the con side, the negative side?
It's much more complicated because there's no like one argument that we went for. So like some rounds we would go for arguments like putting stuff in space could make other countries freak out. They might think it's that we're weaponizing space or trying to control space, and that would be bad. Mm-hmm. Or okay. we can make arguments as to why like other countries should do the plan instead and not the U.S.
Now I think would be a good time for us to get a little flavor of the competition, to get a sense of what it is, because it's not like people arguing on cable television now, is it? You have some copy there. You have some information that you used in an actual competition there, I believe, Jeffrey. Tell us what you're going to do and then go ahead and do it.
Okay, so this is just a little excerpt from our first affirmative constructive, which we talked about earlier about research on the ISS. The International Space Station's National Laboratory will be underutilized due to the lack of NASA support and launch assistance. This is GAO in 9. Research utilization has not been the priority. NASA projects utilize approximately 50% of the ISS research facilities. NASA faces several significant challenges, including the impending time of the space shuttle, reduced launch capabilities for cargo, high cost for launches, and no dedicated funding to support research, limited capability, and demands of crew community advance for the crew's time, and uncertain future for the ISS beyond 2015. Thus, the plan, the United States federal government should substantially increase its support for the International Space Station National Laboratory, including launch and utilization support for parties
okay.
interested in research.
Before I get exhausted listening to you, I'll jump in right there. Jeffrey Ding, why talk so fast in these competitions?
Well, mostly it's just because we want to get out more information, more of our arguments.
So you're limited by time?
You're limited by time, right. Mm-hmm. Time constraints are basically the only rule in debate. So
the only rule. So there are no style points in debate?
There are, but style points can sort of be modified. You can debate sort
because,
of
because, sorry, Jeffrey, but I wouldn't have given you any style points because I would find that sort of a quick droning. I would tune out unless I was a debater, I think. So that's why I'm going to the style points.
Yeah, there are we call them speaker points, and you do have to sort of adjust to who it is who's assigning the speaker points. So if you were in the back of the room as the judge assigning the speaker points, we would not have Jeffrey read that fast.
Oh.
And okay. So in front of different judges who think of debating different ways, then we sort of adapt and try to do what they want to listen to.
Mm. So that's unlike other sports. If I would take competitive diving, springboard diving, you wouldn't cater to the judges in any way. You'd try to nail it.
Yeah, exactly.
So it pays to know who your judges are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else are you paying attention to? In that excerpt that we heard, what don't I know is important about the way you did it or the points you were bringing across?
So the most important part of that was there's this thing called the tag, which is the first sentence I'll read on each argument. So the tag in this one was the ISS National Laboratory is being underutilized. That's what the judge will write down on their paper. And then the rest of what I read, which was slightly faster, and you might not be able to get all of the words, that was the body of the text. So that's just quotes from an article.
Mm-hmm. And the judge is going there and listing perhaps in bullet points the arguments that you have.
Exactly.
He's what? Grading the – he's judging the strength of your arguments and the number of your arguments.
Yes.
Okay. And then when we're in the negative – he's heard the affirmative, and then he's looking at how well you strike down the affirmative's points.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I've got it. I mentioned at the outset that you won the national championship, and this was a 9-6 decision. Set the scene for us in this final of the national championship.
It's actually a very interesting debate round because, like I said earlier, now there are lots of different judges who view debate in different ways. And the final panel of the NFL tournament is perhaps the most diverse panel of any debate round held all year. There are judges who like to listen to very fast speakers. There are judges who like to listen to very slow speakers. There are people who work for corporations related to the topic or sponsor corporations who have little to no experience in debate. And so there is – you do have to really sort of try to appeal to – very different points of view.
So how do you do that when you know there are certain judges and there's this great diversity of opinion about what constitutes a good debate, good debater?
It really forces you to explain your arguments in very understandable ways. You know, people who are very involved in debate, they become, you know, terms that we all recognize as things that, you know, say a lot with just one word because we have a common understanding. And when that common understanding isn't present, you sort of have to explain your argument to a greater depth so that people who don't know those terms can still understand what's going on.
Okay. Take us to the final round. I wanted to go there just a minute ago, but we didn't quite get there. Take us to that final round, the national championship, this 9-6 decision. I find it amazing. You beat a team from the private and exclusive college prep school located between Oakland and Berkeley, California. We want to mention the annual tuition at this college prep school, more than $33,000 a year, not including book fees. You often compete against students from such exclusive private schools. And here you are, public high school students from Iowa, beating these students. How did you do it?
I guess we kind of worked hard despite the sort of lack of resources and, mm-hmm. you know, institutional prowess that other schools may have access
to. So they have more resources than you think?
Usually.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's a lot of complicated research. Yes, there's like these procedures. But ultimately, it's pretty simple, just persuading the judge. And if your arguments are more logical, if you're able to garner credibility with the judge, if you're able to show some emotion and be able to persuade the judge, that's all that really matters.
Mm-hmm. Liam Hancock and Jeffrey Ding are with me, recent graduates and policy debaters at West High School in Iowa City. In May, they won the nation's most prestigious high school debate, held annually at the University of Kentucky. It's called the Tournament of Champions. And last month, they were crowned national champions in Indianapolis at the National Forensic League's National Tournament. Jeffrey and Liam, along with other members of the debate team at Iowa City West, had three primary coaches: Melanie Johnson, Megan Johnson, and Travis Henderson. Joining us now as well is Travis Henderson. He is the assistant debate coach at West High School in Iowa City. Welcome, Travis, to our studio.
Thank you.
And congratulations to you. I'm sure a lot of the credit goes to you for preparing these gentlemen for this momentous competition. I wonder, how unusual is it, how rare is it that a public school team would beat these exclusive college prep teams?
It's extremely rare. I think we did the math on this, right? Did we ever figure out conclusively when the last time a public school has won the TOC?
The last time
that wasn't a North
public
Shore school
with our size budget won. It's been over 15 years since one won the Tournament of Champions. I'm not sure about the National Forensic League Tournament.
You say our site's budget translates into resources. What can Travis? What can a prep school, an expensive college prep school, afford that Iowa City West High School cannot afford?
Well, for example,
makes a difference.
It does make a difference when we're kind of rolling up to the Tournament of Champions, for example. You know, we kind of, at least from West High, we kind of have to rely on the people we already have on stipend. So it's three coaches, and we were fortunate enough to be able to hire a second one because we did some fundraising, and the community was really responsive. However, you know, a private school with a much larger budget can hire, I don't know, can we say an armada of card-cutting power? People who can just go in and do hours and hours of research and maybe have 8-9 people with them just cutting new arguments. Every round is a new, it seems like, is almost a new affirmative.
And then getting your debaters in really top form, as you would a presidential debater, perhaps.
Right.
Just making sure it's boom, 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 like that, right there.
And especially with debate, I think you can't kind of undervalue the importance of perspectives. So if you have 9 perspectives and half of those graduated also top colleges and debated at them, then, you know, that's going to help you pretty significantly.
What was the reaction in the hall? You said this was done before an audience of how many, Travis?
The Nationals was a couple hundred at least, and it was broadcast, so who knows?
What was the reaction in the debate sphere, if I can call it that, to the fact that Iowa City West, a public high school, beat a prestigious college prep school?
Well, you know, actually, most of the reactions were, and I completely agree with this, that a lot of people said, I don't think anyone could have deserved it more than you guys did. They're right when they say that they go to a round, you know, and they're always friendly. They're always friendly with the judge. They're always cordial with their opponents. And I mean, that builds credibility in the community. People respond really positively to teams who understand that the importance is, you know, the argument and not discrediting a person, but discrediting what they have to say.
Let me share with you a quote from another well-known figure from an era slightly bygone. In 2004, Donald Rumsfeld, who was U.S. Secretary of Defense at the time, when he testified before the 9/11 Commission, he was telling the commission that it had a tremendous power to focus the attention of the nation on critical questions. And in doing so, he said, quote, "I used to think one of the most powerful individuals in America was the person who could select the annual high school debate topic. Think of the power," he said, "to set the agenda and determine what millions of high school students will study, read about, think about, talk about with friends, discuss with their teachers, and debate with their parents and siblings over dinner." What a remarkable thing for the former defense secretary to say.
Wow.
Had you heard that quote before?
I have not.
Travis, reaction to that? Had you heard that?
I hadn't heard that quote. I can see where he's coming from. I guess the topics have always also been kind of specific to the times. If you go back, and I think there's even a Wikipedia page, and you can look at this, and you go back to very early decade, you know, the very early 20th century, and you can start to see the evolution. And it's labor unions early on, right? Mm-hmm. And then it starts to evolve towards like world government topics when the creation of the UN starts. And then today it's environmental topics, it's energy topics, it's terrorism topics. So I think those men and women that sit down and decide the topic are also responding to something even bigger than themselves. And I guess that's what we're thinking about, is the issues that are affecting us today.
Liam and Jeffrey, how do you think you might be able to apply the knowledge, the skills that you've learned from debate in your futures? Liam?
Well, one of the biggest things is the ability to research a topic, is that, you know, we would sort of, before competition even started, we wouldn't sort of know what arguments people were going to make. So we just sort of had to delve into what's going on in space right now, what are people talking about, and that ability to sort of go off on a topic and go really in depth to learn about it is a skill that I'll take with me for the next 4 to 8 years of school.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a career in mind already, Liam?
No, something related to economics.
Okay. What about you, Jeffrey? How will you use these skills, this expertise you've gained?
I think the most important skill debate has taught me is just the ability to communicate, like the ability to persuade, the ability to like clearly organize my thoughts and convince another person, or at least be able to convey my thoughts clearly to another person. And that's a skill that's used like every second of your life.
Jeffrey and Liam, would it bother you? We talked about whether you need to believe in an argument. This is high school debate. You have no repercussions of arguing a point other than winning a or losing a competition. If there were real-world competitions for arguing about space, for arguing about national health, for arguing about something, are you? Does this prepare you for arguing whatever point of view you're paid to argue and do it well?
Definitely. I mean, sort of as you talked about earlier, the ability to see both sides makes you very capable of, you know, researching something you may not be sympathetic to, but you have to, either for a paper or for someone who's paying you.
Is that a good thing?
Perhaps. Debate also teaches you to strike down those who string things together to make an illogical or improper argument, and you can point out where there are fallacies in their arguments. So other individuals who may be attempting, you know, to argue for something that is bad, we're also prepared to prove them wrong.
So your thoughts on that, Jeffrey?
That's actually a really interesting point, because there are I think what's really cool about debate is that it's self-reflexive. So there will be teams that argue that debate is bad, and they'll give reasons, like they'll give examples of Karl Rove and like how we are training the future Karl Roves of the world. We're training like people we're training other people who are just able to argue whatever side they feel and have no like ethical perspective, have no like personal advocacy. So there will be teams who say debate is bad, and you'll have to give reasons why debate is good. And I think that it's not necessarily debate that is the problem with people who are like don't have an ethical perspective. I think that just goes to whether you have your own morals in terms of having an advocacy in the future.
And learning this skill doesn't change your own morals.
Right.
And your own ethics.
Right.
You feel. Travis Henderson, as assistant debate coach at West High, I wonder when you hear how they talk about how they use these skills, whether it has ethical or moral implications, I wonder what you have for aspirations for your debaters. What do you hope comes from this education in debate?
I hope that they go on to always recognize that I think that not only does every question have multiple solutions, but that every question has multiple questions, and that when they try to answer those questions for themselves and wherever they end up, which they could be anything and I'd be happy for them, that they have just a principled sense of what it means to consider all sides and do the right thing.
Travis Henderson, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And also thanks to our champions, Jeffrey Ding and Liam Hancock of West High School in Iowa City. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I forgot to ask, where to from here? Where are you going?
University of Iowa.
University of Iowa, both of you.
Yep.
To the debate team.
Mm-hmm.
And to more championships.
Hopefully.
All right, guys. We wish you all the best of luck. Thanks.
Thanks.
Jeffrey Ding and Liam Hancock were crowned national champions of high school policy debate last month. And we end with this little-known bit of trivia. Author Gary Allen Fine, in his 2001 book, Gifted Tongues, High School Debate and Adolescent Culture, mentions that Michael Stipe, the lead singer for the band R.E.M., debated in high school and in college at the University of Georgia. R.E.M.'s song, It's the End of the World as We Know It, was inspired by the rapid delivery and arguments found in policy debate. I have a hurricane, listen to yourself, turn world, serve its own needs, dummy, serve your own needs, beat it up an ox, speak, grunt, no strength, the ladder starts to clatter with fear, bite down, high fire and a fire, representing seven games in a government for hire and a combat site, left and west are coming in a hurry with the furies breathing down your neck, team by team reporters baffle Trump, tether crop, look at that, no plane, fine, then, overflow, population common food, but it'll do, save yourself, serve yourself, world, serve its own needs, listen to your heart, breathe, dummy with the rapture and the reverend and the right, you bitch, you're gonna Coming up, a conversation with ISU track and field and cross-country coach Corey Immels. We'll talk about the South Sudanese Olympian and former ISU All-American runner Gor Mariel competing in the marathon in a couple of weeks under the Olympic flag. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.